ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्यागजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातं सहगणरघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादां सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे हाउ मेनी हरे कृष्ण आवाज नहीं आए हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण ओके So how many gurus do we have in our Vaishnava parampara? Who can say? How many? 30. In the list in the, we find in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita as it is, there's 32 names given, yeah. But we also say Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. So every Vaishnava is a guru. Jai Krishna Tatta Veta Shai Guru Hai. So there are unlimited gurus. Another way, there's only one guru. Guru is one, but he manifests in many forms. There's only one in the sense that all the gurus say the same thing. It's not a different message. We worship Srila Prabhupada. We learned everything from him. One major principle that we learned is that who can be a guru is the one who follows properly his own guru. Now, I was writing that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, that book came to be known. After it was published, and several devotees who read it told me that it had increased their faith in Srila Prabhupada to see how, having had an exposition of the life and teachings, of course his life is not, it doesn't span from 1874 to 1936, his life, he's eternal. But from our limited perspective, he could be seen in that time. So having seen the life and teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, many devotees told me they saw that they could see how Srila Prabhupada was exactly following him. That should have been known and understood from the very beginning. Maybe it was just accepted on faith, and having read that book, then devotees could understand more how Srila Prabhupada was so closely following Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And many of the sayings that Srila Prabhupada would tell, even the jokes he would occasionally tell, the examples he gave, were from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And of course what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave, that was all based on the whole tradition, the Vaishnava parampara, and all ultimately deriving from Shastra. So starting on the previous, just they come quite close in there, don't they? The disappearance day and the appearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So just a few weeks ago, I started to speak on Srila Prabhupada, our Prabhupada, because throughout the whole Gauriya Math diaspora, all the different branches, they refer, when they say Srila Prabhupada, they mean Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So our Srila Prabhupada, he often used to quote and say, my Guru Maharaj used to say, or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say. So I just started quoting some of those and explaining them a little. Because after all, what is most important about a guru is what he teaches. It's not so much, or it's not at all what his physical appearance is, what his physical background is. 50 years ago in India, it could hardly be imagined that a Westerner would be a guru or a sadhu. Although actually there was one Vaishnav guru here in India even before Prabhupada went to the West. You know that? Ever heard of that? Not Vivekananda. He wasn't. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just a little purification there. Maybe they don't understand English, or they saw the guru before Prabhupada. But anyway. So his name, I believe, was Richard Nixon. Ex-president of the United States, but he was a British airline pilot in the First World War, I believe it was, and then he was shot down, and as he was going down, he prayed to God, and then miraculously he didn't die, and then after the war he came to, after the First World War, he came to India and he took initiation and he established an ashram in Almora, which is in Himachal Pradesh, I believe, is it? Yeah. Uttarakhand. Yeah. And he was had some kind of connection with the Radharaman Goswamis. He was actually he was in Lucknow. He was initiated by the wife of the Vice Chancellor of Lucknow University. Anyway, what I was saying was that it was hardly imagined that Westerners could become gurus. So what is the important thing is that what does he teach? We have to hear and understand what his teachings are. It's not necessarily how many temples he's opened. How many temples did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu open? None. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj? None. But it's the teachings. Oh, so many of these. So just I'll quote some the things that Srila Prabhupada said, so that we can see the continuity between Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and our own Srila Prabhupada. Now here's one in which it might seem to see that the continuity is broken. Srila Prabhupada wrote in the Nectar of Instruction, verse 5, purport, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that unless one chants at least 64 rounds of japa, 100,000 names, he is considered fallen. So that might seem to be a break in the continuity, because Srila Prabhupada gave us 16 rounds to chant. But Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain after that, that in the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, we've fixed it as 16. You might know the history that when Srila Prabhupada first initiated disciples in the West, he told them to chant 64 rounds and they could. It was seemingly impossible for them. And even if we asked all of you to chant 64 rounds a day, I think also even 16 rounds is very difficult for most in the busy Delhi life. Or even if you weren't in Delhi, it's, you may find it difficult because the mind is so distracted. So Srila Prabhupada says 64 rounds, and then devotees expressed their inability. Then he said 32 rounds, and then he said 16 rounds, minimum. And actually from my research, I found that, I asked different disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there are no longer any present in the world, but I asked several of them, and I don't actually remember any of them telling me that they were told to chant 64 rounds. Some were told to chant 16 rounds seemed to be quite common standard. And Srila Prabhupada himself said that in my household life, he used to chant 16 rounds, because he said I would chant 4 on rising, 4, how was it, 4 before breakfast, 4 before lunch, 4 before dinner. That means you can't, he wouldn't allow himself to eat until he chanted those 4, and then 4 before retiring. And in this way he chanted 16 rounds, 4 plus 4 plus 4 plus 4. He was a busy grihastha, so that's the way he did it. He made a rule for himself, swaniyam, his own rule, that I won't eat breakfast unless I've chanted at least 4 rounds. And I won't take lunch until I've chanted at least 4 rounds. I won't take dinner until I've chanted at least 4 rounds. I won't rest at night until I've finished full 16. So in this way we can understand that Srila Prabhupada chanted 16. Some, at least one person, one devotee told me, told him to chant 4 rounds. So, and others he wouldn't give any number at all, chant, he just chant like this. But it's well known that he said you have to chant 64 rounds. Actually not 64, 1 lakh, but it's generally considered to be the same thing. Although technically it's not exactly the same thing. I've discussed this in my book, the Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, that he also equated service with chanting. Anyway, it's a big topic, but the point is, he insisted on that. Prabhupada gave us 16 rounds, and Srila Prabhupada said that if we chant this, you can go back to Godhead. He said 16 rounds. If you chant 16 rounds and follow 4 regulated principles and practice Krishna consciousness very seriously in this life, you can go back home, back to Godhead, in this very life. And that's one of the things that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati often used to say, go back home, back to Godhead in this life. And Prabhupada would also say, go back home, back to Godhead in this life. Then another quote, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that asking God for mukti or anything else other than bhakti is like going to a rich man and asking for ashes. Can you follow that? A poor man comes to a rich man. The rich man expects that the poor man will ask him for something. it used to be common part of this Indian culture, if there's a rich man in the village, the local sheikh, then people would, someone, poor man, he has to get his daughter married, he'd ask for some contribution or at least some loan or something like this. So the rich man is expected to help the poor man in a time of need. So if a poor man comes to a rich man and asks him for some ashes, it's ridiculous, because ashes can be found anywhere. Maybe not in Delhi nowadays so much, but otherwise, for cooking, everyone used to cook with wood, and so ashes were widely available. And not just cooking, but there would be yajnas going on, so wood would be from that also. So to ask for ashes, it's ridiculous. It's so foolish, you can't, it's unimaginable foolishness. You can imagine someone doing something foolish, like, I don't know, walking up, trying to attack the Prime Minister, for instance. That would be a very foolish thing to do, because you'd probably get killed in the endeavor, or if you didn't get killed, you'd be put in prison for a long time. So it's an imaginable foolishness to try to attack the Prime Minister, but it's almost unimaginable foolishness that someone should ask a rich man for ashes. Because why would you do that? Because ashes are of no value whatsoever, and it's easily available. No one sells ashes. Maybe nowadays you can, if it's basma or something, they call for the this vibhuti, they might, but even then, you get a hold of maybe this much for 5 rupees or something like that. It'd be something like selling Ganga Jal, where actually the Ganga Jal, if you take the Ganga Jal at the Ganga, it has no monetary value. But because it has religious value, then when it's filtered and bottled and taken somewhere else, then it has some value, because it's been brought from one place to another. But the water itself has no monetary value. So it's an unimaginable foolishness. But then people think that, well, asking for mukti, well, that's something very big, isn't it? Or you can ask God, please, I'm Artho, Jignyasur, Artharti. These are all people who approach God, they want something. They want, and the person who is artha, he's distressed, he wants relief from distress. In this regard, there's a story told by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, also told by Srila Prabhupada. And it's an ancient example that's given of the woman going to the forest to collect wood for selling. It's not a very big profitable business, but it's just for people in the village or the town, it's convenient for them, they don't have to go and collect it themselves. So someone brings from the forest and you make a little money like that. So she was carrying a big bundle of wood on her head, and she tripped and it fell down, and she called out, "Oh, Govinda!" in distress. So Govinda comes in front and says, "Yes, what do you want?" He said, "Oh, please put this bundle of wood back on my head." "Ah, thank you, that's good. Now I can get on with my work." Similar thing, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur told this, and I'm not sure if Prabhupada told this also, but in Bengal, especially in East Bengal, there are so many rivers. So much of the transport, commercial transport and passenger transport, is by boat. So going downstream is very easy. Going upstream is not very easy, unless there's a strong wind and you have a sail. Otherwise, you have to pull the boat upstream. The men are hired. You'll see they're very strong men. And their skin is completely black because they have to pull these boats in the hot sun. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave the idea of a man is pulling the boat upstream. Lot of work, heavy, hard work. And underneath the path is full of stones and very uncomfortable path. No one makes a nice path for the people to pull the boat. So as he's pulling it, he's thinking, if I ever become a rich man, I'll make the path smooth. He doesn't think, if I'm a rich man, then I won't have to pull the boat at all. He can't think of... For him, life means pulling boats, that's all. It might even be that the wind is blowing in his face, so he's against the jet stream or something like that. There's some word for that. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would point out the foolishness of people who approach God for some relief from distress, or they want some money, or even jignyasu. Those who are inquisitive, they're not really interested in serving Krishna, but they just want to know something about it, just out of curiosity. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave this example. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he always pushed up to the highest standard, pure devotional service. He didn't encourage mixed devotion. There's a lot of mixed devotion in India. We say the word bhakti. What does the average person in India think of when they say bhakti? Not anya bhilashita shunyam jnana kama dhyana vitam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhakti rutama. They don't think of that. They have no idea of that. That devotional service should be without any personal desire, not even the desire for mukti. They have no idea of that. But there's bhakti, some emotion, some sentiment directed toward Krishna or Shiva or Mataji or some so-called guru. That's what they call bhakti. And it's a feeling and you feel nice. But there's no idea, what to speak of, no personal desire. There's no idea of surrender to Krishna, that you're supposed to give yourself fully. People like to hear stories of devotees. Generally it might be thought on the Vyasa Puja Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would tell many stories of devotees, of himself, and we like to hear them. But hearing about it and living it is a different thing. In this regard, that takes us into the next quote I'm going to give from Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that they are like people trying to lick at a bottle of honey that is sealed closed. If one does not know how to taste honey, one begins licking at the bottle, but for one to actually taste the honey, the bottle must be opened, and the key to opening it is the devotee. So you can imagine that's another foolishness. If someone gives you a bottle of honey and you say, take this, it's very sweet and it tastes very good and it's very nourishing, and you take it and you start licking the bottle. If you give the bottle of honey and say it's very tasty, you're referring to the honey, not to the bottle. And it's presumed that the person who's receiving it understands that. But if they don't understand it and they think, oh, he's pointing at it and saying it's very tasty, so he thinks it must be the bottle, and he starts licking the bottle. No, it's not very tasty. So that is something like the scholars who try to analyze bhakti. There are many, not that many, a few here and there, in the West and in India, and they like to make scholarly theses about bhakti. Another saying from Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur in this regard is that when history and allegory are thrown out, then Krishna Katha can begin. Let's just try to understand this. Because many people, they talk about Krishna or they write about Krishna in a very scholarly way, as if Krishna is a historical figure. Or they write that, well, Krishna was some imagined rural god, and then that imagined rural god became cloned, or what's the word, joined up with the personality of the Vishnu, of the Rig Veda, and then they said that this rural god means just like you have in every village, there's some local Mataji and some local Shiv with some local name like that. Or there's some Gramya Devata, some village god. So they had the idea that Krishna was some village god, and then they joined that with the Vishnu and they said Krishna's god. Or they say there may have been such a person, Krishna, and he was badly behaved in his youth, but later on he became a good philosopher. So many ideas they have. They tried, or they write about the history of Vaishnavism. This happened, and that happened, and this happened, and that happened, as if the acharyas are ordinary people. Or they may say, oh, Krishna was a very great man, as if to compliment him. Yes, Krishna, very great, very great. Just like Netaji Subhash Bose, or something like this. Very great, great figure. So they think of Krishna as a historical figure, without understanding that he is beyond time. He appears in this world, but he's not of this world. An example given in this regard, given by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And again, when we say Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he said this and he said that, we have to understand he comes in a disciplic succession. So it's not that a guru just pops up out of nowhere and says, here I am and I'm going to tell you something. But he has his antecedents. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave the example, which is again given from Shastra, that if you're sitting in a room, there's a window, you can see outside, and you see a horse goes past. So when the horse, say you're sitting and the horse comes from this side, first you see the nose of the horse, then the horse goes trotting past, and then you see the tail, and then you don't see the horse anymore. But it doesn't mean that because you only saw the horse when he came into your vision and then you stopped seeing him after he went out of your vision, that the horse came into existence when you started to see him and the horse ceased to exist when he went out of your vision. So in the same way, this example can be used for various phenomena, but regarding Krishna, it doesn't mean that when he appeared in this world, he began to exist. And when he left this world, he ceased to exist. That could be said about Netaji Subhash Chandra Bose. I'm just saying his name because I said it before. He was born on such and such a date, must have been around, 1894, something like that. And he died, we're not sure when, but it would have been approximately It's unclear, but probably around 1946 or 1947, something like that. So Netaji Subhash, let's take another example where we know the dates. Mahatma Gandhi, anyone knows the dates? Anyone. We take their life, he's born on a certain date and finished on a certain date. So Netaji Subhash Chandra Bose didn't exist before 1894, and he ceased to exist after 1947. The Atma that was identified as Netaji Subhash Chandra Bose, that existed before and continues to exist somewhere else now. But that particular body and that particular identity only existed within that frame of time. So that personality and that body had a beginning and an end. But Krishna isn't like that. And the Acharyas are not like that also. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, about him, Srila Prabhupada dedicated his Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada's great life work. He dedicated his Srimad Bhagavatam edition, dedicated to his Divine Grace Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. He lives forever by his divine instructions, and the follower lives with him. So we cannot understand Krishna by historical analysis. That, well, maybe there was someone who lived at a certain time and this and that, and they make theory. No, forget it. It's not going to work. We can't. And then when we stop the historical analysis, and when we stop this allegorical attempts to explain Krishna, it's all an allegory. Krishna represents this, and the gopis represent that, and Arjuna, what is this? The five Pandavas represent the five senses, and so on and so on. It's all allegory. Forget it. Krishna is not an allegory. Krishna is reality. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say that when we reject history and allegory, then Krishna Katha can begin. Then we can actually begin to understand Krishna. So the same thing, licking the bottle of honey from the outside. I sometimes feel very sorry for these, I should feel sorry all the time for these scholars. There are some very good scholars from the point of view of scholarship. They're very good scholars and they've studied Krishna, and some of them study ISKCON. But they don't commit themselves to Krishna. It's just their object of study. Some people may study Jainism. Well, that's a very big category, but... Someone may study has anyone here done a PhD? Any PhD? What was your PhD on? Medical biochemistry. It must have been a lot more specific than that. Specifically? Multivalent vaccines. That's the title of your PhD thesis? Pretty much, okay. It gets pretty specialized. If you wanted to see, you wanted to study microbiology is a big field, and then you come to vaccinology, multivalent vaccines. Does anyone here, apart from you, have any idea what a multivalent vaccine is? And try and imagine what it means. So the scholars, they get into a lot of, I'm just making the point, scholars get into a lot of detail. So they may understand something. You're probably one of the world's greatest experts in multivalent vaccines, because how many people study that? Very few, yeah. So like that, there are scholars who study Gauriya Vaishnavism. And if you take all the scholars in the world, it's only going to be a 0.00 something percentage of the research scholars in the world study Gauriya Vaishnavism. And some of them very, very, very knowledgeable. But they didn't surrender to Krishna. They missed the whole point. They might even join in a kirtan. I was reading something by A.L. Basham, who was a scholar who died a few years ago. And he recounted how once in Calcutta he joined, there was a kirtan going on. This is in the 1960s, I believe, even before Srila Prabhupada had gone to the West. There was a kirtan going on at Shelda Station, and I joined in it, and I just forgot myself, and I became absorbed in it. But then he came, after the kirtan, he came back to his usual scholarly consciousness. And he, instead of thinking, oh, Krishna's mercy on me, now let me do kirtan for the rest of my life, he thought, oh, that's something interesting, I'll write about that. It's something else for my scholarship. I don't want to put him down in particular because he wrote some. Many of them write very nice things. Actually, most of them who study ISKCON, they know about all the problems of ISKCON probably more than all the ISKCON members do. But most of them are still very appreciative. And one thing I've seen in their appreciation, because I've read quite a lot of their stuff, is that they appreciate that devotees are very dedicated, especially following all these principles. To follow all these principles means you have to be very dedicated. So they appreciate that the devotees are very serious about what they're doing. But still the scholars, they're so dedicated to scholarship that they couldn't think of taking the top off the honey jar and licking the honey. In other words, giving ourselves to Krishna. Yeah. Giving ourselves to Krishna. They may even live with the devotees for some time. And in some ways become influenced by them. They may become vegetarians. But somehow they know so much that they have some attraction to Krishna consciousness, but because of that scholarly consciousness, they're held, they won't allow themselves to give themselves to Krishna. Another quote, Srila Bhakti, this is again from Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhakti Sthansaswar Thakur used to say, "This place is not fit for a gentleman." This place means Delhi, the whole material world is not fit for a gentleman. He himself, Bhakti Sthansaswar Thakur, had a lot of experience dealing with very bad people. A lot of very bad people he had to deal with. People tried to kill him. They developing Mayapur, obstruction he faced at every step, dealing with servants who were thieves and Brahmins who were called for worshipping the deities who were thieves and corrupt and very bad people. People making false cases and bringing false witnesses. And so many bad things. His only endeavor was to speak the truth. And for that, he was treated very, very badly by so many people. So he had experience. Philosophically, we can understand. He had experience. Srila Prabhupada also wrote about that in his Vrindavani Bhajan. You might have seen that poem that Srila Prabhupada wrote while he was living in Vrindavan alone. He said, I can't remember the Bengali exactly, but he said that I have my family and sons and grandchildren, but I have no money, so it's I kinto artane. I have no arta, which arta means money and meaning. So it, there's no meaning to me because I don't have any money. So they've all rejected me because I don't have any money. And Prabhupada said, now I have seen the actual face of Maya, how this love, the family members love me, but when I lose all my money, then I lost the money and the love also went away with it. So this material world is not a fit place for a gentleman. Then another quote Prabhupada gave of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He used to say, the spiritual master is the transparent medium. This is a most important statement. Guru Tattva is a very big tattva, a very big topic to understand. What qualifies one to be a guru? Spiritual guru. The same message. You just bring the same, what you've heard, you transmit it to others. Transparently. Transparently means we don't bring our own motives, misconceptions, kam krodh lobh moha mada matsarya. We don't put that in the way. We just give the same message. The same thing comes through, generation after generation. And if we insert something of our own idea, then the transparency becomes compromised. Just like if you have a window and it's very clean and then a little dust comes on it, then you can't see so clearly. If more dust comes on it, you can see less clearly. And if a lot of dust comes on it, then hardly any light will come through at all. So transparent medium. The spiritual master is a transparent medium. Then another saying about the guru that Srila Prabhupada quoted from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada said that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that you have to select a spiritual master not by seeing but by your ear, by hearing. And you don't select a spiritual master who has got very good hair or a beard or a beautiful feature. He is very nice, good looking. No, you must hear. Now, this is, again, a very important statement. Everything that the gurus say, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, everything Prabhupada said, it's all very important what they say. It's not so important what they look like. Many people like to come to get darshan of a sadhu or a guru. It's a very good part of Vedic culture. But they should know that the real way to see is by hearing. That is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Shutikshana Pata. That seeing is by hearing. Seeing is by hearing. An example we can understand is an example I've given many times. Now, you all know what an electron is. Maybe you forgot because it was a long time since you studied at school. It's a subatomic particle. Negatively charged subatomic particle. Okay. So you can understand. You can study more and more about electrons. Right? Okay, everyone's happy with that? No objections? How many of you have seen an electron? Anyone? PhD Wally? No one ever saw an electron. But you all believe in electrons. And you all believe you can study electrons, and then there are this ons and that ons and bosons and bisons and who knows what, so many things. But no one ever saw it. So how can you understand anything about it if you never saw it? Well, you understand by hearing, right? You studied in school. And then who do you hear from? You hear from people who have made the research and who understand. That's the theory anyway, although if you go deeper into it, you'll probably find that they all disagree with each other in so many ways. But from a layman's point of view, we learn at school this, this, that, that, that. So you learn by hearing from those who know. And you have to have faith that they know. If the child goes in school and says, today we're going to talk about electrons, and the child says, I don't believe in electrons. Show me an electron. You can't show me. It's all rubbish. Then you can't learn anything about electrons. So in the same way, if someone says, now we're going to talk about God. There is no God. Show me God. I can show you means I can make you understand, just like I can make you understand about electrons, but you have to sit and listen. You have to have faith in the teacher. You have to have faith in the subject. You have to apply your intelligence. Then you can understand. And if you don't, if from the beginning you object, say, no, no, you have to show me this, this, that, then it's hopeless. So we have to understand a guru by hearing and not by seeing. Srila Prabhupada, when he came to the Western world, he wrote that poem that he had hope that the Western people, even though they're so much covered by the lower modes of nature, Rajogun, Tamogun, what did he say in his poem? That by chanting Hare Krishna, they'll be purified. Did he write that? What did he say? When they hear the message of Bhagavatam, then they can be purified. Interesting, isn't it? Because he did give the holy name, undoubtedly. And people did come by being attracted by the holy name, but Srila Prabhupada stressed that by hearing, Tato Rajastamo Bhava Kamala Bhadayastya, these lower modes of nature would be overcome. So you have to understand by hearing. This is a principle we should stress within our ISKCON also, because at least what I see, most of the devotees, they take a guru not by hearing, but just by custom. Everyone's initiated by this guru. I'll also be initiated, but you're supposed to hear. And it says select a spiritual master. That means also one's supposed to apply one's intelligence. It's a very sentimental thing in Hindu culture. You're a guru, and then you feel something, and then you become you get initiation or something. But you're actually supposed to apply your intelligence and hear. And if you can have faith in what they say, then you may approach them to surrender. Not by looking, not by seeing, but by hearing. So hearing means the message of Shastra. Guru speaks the message of Shastra. I'll just do one more now and finish this session. Srila Prabhupada quoted Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on having children. How many children did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur have? He was a Naishtik Brahmachari. So he had no children. Spiritually he had so many children, with the grandchildren and great-grandchildren. But physically he had no children. But he wasn't against the principle of having children. But he said, if I could produce really Krishna-conscious children, I would have sex 100 times. This is from Naishtik Brahmachar. He never had any girlfriends. That culture wasn't going on in India anyway at that time. At least not openly. There might have been a little bit secretly, but it was considered very bad. Even a few years ago in India, it was considered very bad. But he said, I would have sex 100 times, but why should I have sex just to produce cats and dogs? He's a very strong personality, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That if you can produce Krishna conscious children, then yes, produce many, bring many. There are many souls waiting who want to take up Krishna consciousness. There may be so many who had darshan of Srila Prabhupada and were attracted, and now they've passed away and they want to come back and be serious, but they need facility for that. So that's one service of grihastha devotees, to give birth, to give opportunity to souls who want to be in Krishna consciousness. But to produce children like cats and dogs. How do cats and dogs create other children? Just simply out of lust. And they give birth to cats and dogs who simply exist. There's no philosophy. It's impossible for cats and dogs to have any understanding. They're just animals, that's all. Just animals. So human beings, if they don't have any higher quest, then Ahara nidra bhaya maithunam cha samanya maitha pashubhya naranam dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesham dharmena hina pashubhya naranam. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending, animals do and humans do. What's the difference between a human and an animal? An animal can practice dharma. So, simple arithmetic. A plus B equals C. That means animal plus dharma equals human. So, C minus B equals A. Human minus dharma equals animal. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
There are more, but I'll finish for now. Unless anyone has any question about this. There are so many things. Actually, if you can see this Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhava, that's there's a lot. If you have many questions, you can get many answers in there. Multivalent in the context of vaccines, has something to do with its atomic structure, or what is that? Or its molecular structure? Difficult to explain to a layman.
In simple English, we need a vaccine for this and that.
Oh, I see. So it's like a multi-vaccine, is it? Did you discover any?
Well, I found out that it's impossible.
Aha. Okay, that's interesting.
And another attempt was to single shot, instead
of getting poked 2 years later,
2 years later. How about just pricking once?
Yeah.
Be done with it. I found out it's impossible.
Okay, thank you.
But still, people are publishing papers on it because scientists.
Yeah, okay. Well, I didn't learn anything when you said that. That's a big statement to say the scientists are big crooks, the biggest crooks, when you've got politicians, businessmen, sadhus. That's a heavy statement. They're really cheating people. Prabhupada exposed them. Did you read that book, Life Comes from Life? Okay, now I have a little bit of science for all of you, which I often do. Okay, you're all ready for science? Okay. A little bit of science here. This is a watch. It's a little bit unusual because it only has one strap, but that's convenient for me. Okay, now where did this watch come from? Anyone knows? Got it from a store, ordered it on the internet. Friends, I have to tell you, I was sitting in a garden one day and there was an explosion at the end of the garden. I went there and found a watch created by an explosion. This, friends, is called science. Don't laugh. Okay, any question? Not possible? You must, what do they call that? Bad science. Bad science. They call it bad science. If you don't agree with us, it's bad science. We have pages and pages of calculations to show it, and you can't understand it. Okay, well, you said it. But it's bad science. It's bad science. Now, it's bad science to oppose it. That's what they say, which is a subjective ad hominem statement.
The definition of science really is to do anything systematically.
That becomes science. That is why, normally, you have astronomy, you often call science.
But the thing is that what depends on the scientists to be at least ethical.
Yeah, you want them to be ethical, but they also have to feed their families. So that's their first consideration. My standard statement to people who promote Big Bang Theory is that, well, look, I'm a layman, I don't know anything, you can show me your pages and pages of calculations, I don't even know what the symbols are supposed to stand for, but what I can understand is that there are people, Big Bang Theory or biological evolutionary theory, that there are people who have studied for years and have got their academic credentials, and they oppose, with using the same data that on which you base your theory, they oppose the theory, which means that it's not actually science in the sense of knowledge, it's highly subjective. Yeah, right. And it'll go on forever. Here's another of my great scientific statements. Okay, go on. You give your great scientific statement.
Nobody wants to disprove another person's work because it takes 10 times more money to disprove somebody else's work. So everyone is right and everyone is wrong.
Na savrishe yasya matangna bhinnam. It was stated in the Mahabharata. You're not considered a philosopher unless you have a different theory to everyone else. Years ago, I saw in a magazine that there are approximately 2,000 theories among astrophysicists as to the origin or otherwise of the universe, origin or solid state or whatever. Then I thought, well, there are probably not many more than 2,000 astrophysicists in the whole world anyway. They all have a different theory. Here's another of my great scientific realizations, folks. Okay, here we are sitting in this great city of New Delhi. No, sorry, Gurugram, near New Delhi, National Capital Region, in the year of the Lord 2019, which means it's approximately 2019 years after Jesus Christ was born. But not exactly, because he was born approximately 4 BC or something like that. So, okay, now we're at a very high level of science, when quantum theory and multivalent vaccine theories and all kinds of theories. And just imagine that science goes on as it is going on now for another 2019 years, right? And we take a quick jump in a time machine and go forward to the year 4038, and believe it or not, we haven't blown each other to pieces with nuclear bombs or any such thing, and the world's more or less going on the way it is. Now, what do you think they will think about the science of the year 2019? They think, very primitive. They got all their theories wrong, isn't it? Which means that it's wrong now. Anyone want to stand up for science here? Bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate. The science of Srimad Bhagavatam is that knowledge which will liberate us from science and everything else. We get liberated from all these poor children, all your children, you all have to go to school. Oh, what a curse. Send them to school, they have to study science and so on. Oh. Hare Krishna. Look at this, show this. Look at that, there you go. Is that the thing that, what's her name, Chawla or something, she got blown up? Is that the same one? What's that Punjabi girl in America? Kalpana Chawla. She had a Kalpana to go into space and instead she got blown into pieces. She almost became the first Indian woman in space. Poor girl. Yeah.
Thank you for your nice.
Nice? I wasn't trying to be nice. Was Daivi Varnashram introduced by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati? Have you ever read Bhagavad Gita? Chatur Varnyam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhaksha is introduced by Krishna. Within the Gaudiya Sampradaya, the first one to promote the need of it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started to institute it on the level of giving giving the status of brahmanas to people not born in brahmana families on the basis of their being Vaishnavas. Our own Srila Prabhupada wanted to take it a lot further by making a worldwide revolution on the basis of Varnashram, and the followers of Srila Prabhupada, most of them have forgotten it, to be quite frank. We're trying to wake them up. It's one of the great missions of Prabhupada, which is there in his books, his letters, but somehow or other. There's not much going on about that. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Thanks for a wonderful lecture.
That's what they say about every lecture. Isn't it? Can there be a sustainable farm system?
Farm community systems which can be established, and is there someone which is self-sustainable, which can be replicated across?
Do you mean to say, is there any community which can, is there any model community going on right now? Is that what you're saying?
Self-sustainable.
That's a big question, because totally self-sustainable, I don't think there's ever been any farm community like that ever in existence, because there's always some interaction with the outside world. For instance, on a farm, you're not likely to produce cooking pots. You may have to get that from outside, or salt, or certain spices, or gold. But maybe we should have the term economically viable. Producing almost everything you need for your daily use. Is there such a community? Not that I know of, but work is going on. We have some communities. There's some devotees in Gujarat have made one community. It's time for it, isn't it? With Delhi and the whole area. So Delhi is famous as the rape capital of the world, which is nonsense because it's not the anyway, that's another question. But that's factually, it is, appears to be the most polluted city in the world. So it's time to get out. Go to the farm. You're a young man. You can do it. Go to the farm. Live simply, peacefully, chant Hare Krishna. But you have to give up sense gratification. No AC. No electric fans. Eco-village, no, we don't call it eco-village. We don't call it eco-village. Eco-village is in Maharashtra, Wardha, what they call eco-village. We don't call it eco-village. We're not particularly trying to impress the fashionable eco-crowd. We're just trying to grow some food and chant Hare Krishna. Please Krishna. Okay, one more question. Should we negate science? Okay, I'll give you another verse. You know the Bhaktivedanta Institute? Have you heard of that? Prabhupada started that. To preach among scientists. So Srila Prabhupada gave us the motto of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Can you get that out? Someone can get it on their iPad or iPod or whatever you have. Technology. Idang hi pungsas tapasas shutasya vasvishtasya suktasya ta buddhidata yo ho. Avichutarto kavibhyeni rupita yadutama shloka gunanu vananam. Can you please find it? Idang hi pungsas. It's from the first canto of the Bhagavatam. Is it the fourth chapter? Narad's instructions to Vyasadeva. Fourth or fifth chapter. Learned circles, the translation begins like this. Learned circles have positively concluded. Did you get it? Anyway, this verse. Yeah, here it is, translation. Learned circles have positively concluded that the advancement of knowledge, namely austerity, study of the Vedas, sacrifice, chanting of hymns and charity, culminates in the transcendental descriptions of the Lord, who is defined in choice poetry. Srila Prabhupada begins his purport like this. Human intellect is developed for advancement of learning in art, science, philosophy, physics, chemistry, psychology, economics, politics, etc. How do you get this thing to come back? Anyway, you get the idea. So Srila Prabhupada said, we don't have anything against science per se, but they should not use it to try to deny the existence of God. If they can, the perfection of science is by science to show the existence of God. Yeah. So we're not against science, but we're against the misuse of science. On the other hand, all this scientific development, it's not really needed. Just like you can study and try to produce some superior breed of cow or something, or some new kind of feed to feed the cow. Otherwise, you just feed the cow grass and let them go on. But there's so much, that's a good example actually, because so much research has gone into agrobiology and getting different types of feed, breeding different kinds. And what have we got? We've got all kinds of food now, which is very poisonous, and the cows, they're just seen as economic objects. So, There's really no need. But if we see the ancient Vedic culture was highly developed scientifically, there was surgery, flight, the word Viman. I just flew yesterday on Bangladesh Biman airline. Biman. It's the same word. There's so many sciences are there. But it's all linked with the Vedic culture, which is aimed at understanding Krishna ultimately. So science is there, but it's this atheistic science is very misleading. So shall we finish there? Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.